We'll move now to the sixth case of the morning, the United States against Joseph Jackson. Mr. McCluskey.
Good morning, Your Honor. Attorney Case McCluskey on behalf of Joseph Jackson. In regards to this case, we're here on the appeal of a series of criminal convictions arising out of the Northern District of Indiana. The appellant has raised four separate issues which I think this court should examine. The first issue is the basis for the stop, the original stop on U.S. 20. The appellant had filed a motion to suppress in front of the Honorable Judge Lozano. And the basic fact situation is that the appellant was walking along a roadway and was stopped by the police officers, an Officer Eakins and Officer Rodriguez, on the basis that he was obstructing traffic. However, at trial, However, at the motion to suppress hearing, these officers could not testify to what traffic he was obstructing. The argument was is that he was obstructing traffic, he was committing a criminal act, therefore they had a reason to stop.
Don't I recall they testified he was walking in the middle of the pavement?
The officers testified that he was walking in the lane. That's correct.
Well, then, you're talking about a credibility issue. The defendant said he wasn't. They said he was. The judge credited their testimony.
That's correct, Judge. He did.
No.
However, I raise issue with this. If we're talking about credibility, you're going to try to tell me that two trained police officers...
I'm telling you that when a finder of fact makes a question of credibility, we touch it only if it just doesn't make any sense at all.
I understand that, Judge. And my point is, what sense is made when you can't testify to the basis of what he was allegedly doing?
He was walking down the middle of the street, in the middle of the street at night.
Judge, the proposed reason for the stop was the Indiana crime of obstructing traffic.
Right.
They couldn't testify to what traffic he was obstructing.
Oh, you mean the absence of traffic at the moment is what you're talking about?
Yes. I specifically
asked. Well, if there's no traffic coming at all, you're free to walk down the middle of the pavement and do that without police interfering. You might have checked to find out whether there's something wrong with him, too, you know. His safety being paramount.
That was one of the issues that was raised. However, this officer had stopped Mr. Jackson twice prior, and each time made the allegation that he had committed an offense, one of which he was convicted of the trial, and one that he was acquitted of the trial. And my point is, if there isn't a valid reason for the stop, for the arrest, then we have to go to what reasonable articulable suspicion did they present? Well, in the absence of a legal arrest, the government put forth the evidence that it's a high crime neighborhood, we had a criminal record, that they knew him. And that begs the question, was it a hunch, was it a guess, or was it the fact that Officer Eakins, who had stopped him two prior times, said, guess what? How much you want to bet he's got something on him? Let's stop. And that's the issue. If it's a hunch, it's not enough. And to say it's a high crime neighborhood without presenting any evidence other than the same officers testifying it's a high crime neighborhood. Well, as a resident of Northwest Indiana, I find that offensive. If you're going to define an area as a high crime neighborhood.
Where do you live in Northwest Indiana?
What's that?
Where do you live in Northwest Indiana?
Sherville.
Sherville?
Sherville.
Is that the same as Gary?
I work in Gary. I have an office in Gary, Judge.
Well, I ask you if you live the same place that you're talking about.
No, I do not. In fact, that part of Northwest Indiana is on the way to Miller, which is a very beautiful neighborhood. But to say that it's a high-crime neighborhood without presenting any evidence to that fact.
Well, it was just down the road from the Ponderosa parking lot where apparently all sorts of nefarious activity goes on regularly. Is that right?
That's what the testimony was. That's correct. But there was no evidence presented as to how many times did they make arrests out of there? They didn't do anything. They simply made the statement, it's a high crime neighborhood. And I have a problem with that. The next big issue questioning was a statement was taken from Mr. Jackson by several federal agents after he was taken into custody. And as we were preparing for trial, I had received all the discovery from the government. The one thing that I had not received was a Miranda waiver form, which was alleged to have happened, which was alleged in the 302. That there's no Miranda waiver form. Couldn't find it. And then we filed suppression motion challenging whether or not the statement was knowing and voluntarily, whether it was knowing voluntarily waiver of Miranda rights. And we had the hearing before the judge, and the judge again, as Judge Rowe spoke to me here, went on the credibility of the officers and made a determination that, yes, he knowingly waived his Miranda rights, which begs the question how you have three police officers, three federal agents in a room, and they lose something so imperative before taking the statement. There was no audio tape presented at trial and no videotape of these rights. We had one federal agent testify that it's part of my ordinary practice to do so, but I don't have any independent recollection of doing this. It burdens on the government to show that, in fact, that he had waived those rights. And, Judge, I'm sorry. It is inconceivable that they could lose something so important. Nothing was taken from Mr. Jackson after the fact that had his handwriting. There wasn't any signatures. There wasn't any initials. There wasn't any question and answer handwritten out. There wasn't anything. There simply was a 302 form that the officers testified that, guess what, we read him his rights. Judge, that was clearly a mistake. The judge should not have allowed that in and did so. Also, in addition, in sentencing, my client was given, determination was made that my client obstructed justice and was given the requisite points for that. I have a pretty hard time with this because what is testified at trial by any witness is based upon what they remember happening. My client testified that he was stopped, that he had a firearm on him, and he never denied what was going on. The problem is that the judge ruled that he perjured himself because he didn't agree with the police officers that he was in the roadway. My client says, I wasn't on the roadway, I was on the berm. The officer says he's on the roadway. Found that to be perjury. He was asked, did you have drugs in your pocket? He said, no. Did you have a firearm? Yes, I did. It was upon that basis that the judge made the ruling that he obstructed justice. And I guess the question I have is, how is that any different than when a police officer testifies that my client possessed a firearm on March 29th, 2000. He testified twice to that. And I guess my question is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. How is this obstruction? The officer testified to what his memory was. My client testified to what his memory was. How is that obstruction? And so I'm asking that this court, after taking into account the briefs, to reset this matter for trial and sentencing.
Mr. McCloskey, where did you say your office is? Where did you say your office is located?
Here. I have an office in Gary and an office in Maryville.
In Maryville as well. Maryville.
Mr. Marks.
May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Marks and I represent the United States. With respect to all three issues, appellant makes an incorrect assessment of the appropriate standard of review. What he is objecting to are factual findings of the district court. Now, certainly with respect to the waiver of the Miranda rights and whether there's probable cause, both things are reviewed by this court de novo. When the district court makes a finding of historical facts, that finding is entitled to deference. And those are the factual findings. What we're really arguing about here are, were those factual findings of the district court clearly erroneous? And they were not. There's more than enough evidence to support them. First, with respect to the motion to suppress, the court heard evidence the defendant was not walking on the side of the road, but he was walking in the middle of the road. The court heard evidence that it was 4:20 in the morning on a poorly lit stretch of road. The court heard evidence from the two officers that cars did, in fact, have to drive around the defendant. That's how they noticed what was going on. They're coming along and they see a car move over to the next lane to come around, and then a second car. Now, whether it's two cars, three cars, the fact of the matter is the district court credited this testimony and concluded that there was enough for these officers to conclude that this individual was obstructing traffic. Certainly, the officers had a basis to arrest him for that offense. As the court knows, one of the reasons or one of the articulated bases for allowing this evidence in is that it was a search incident to a lawful arrest. It was a search incident to a lawful arrest for obstructing vehicular traffic. Walking down the middle of the road at night, essentially a four-lane highway that has a shoulder, and there he is in the middle of the road. They had probable cause to believe he had done that, and under Indiana law, they had a basis to place him under arrest. They also had a basis under Terry to investigate further. And I believe one member of the court pointed out that they might be concerned not only for the safety of drivers, but for the safety of the individual walking down the road. And the district court specifically heard testimony to this effect from one of the officers. What were you worried about? Well, we were worried about the safety of drivers, and we were worried about what's this guy doing in the middle of the road. Now, defendant testified at that hearing that he wasn't walking in the middle of the road. District court concluded that was not true. It listened to the witnesses and made a credibility determination that that was incorrect. And so on that basis, there was support for the district court's finding. The same holds true with respect to the Miranda warning. Defendant is again attempting to argue, how is it possible that they lost this document? Therefore, we must conclude that Miranda warnings were not given. But as this court has said, Miranda warnings do not need to be written. They do not need to even be signed. In fact, where a defendant explicitly refuses to sign a Miranda waiver form, a Miranda waiver can be found. This district court made a factual finding that the facts were that this defendant was advised of his Miranda warnings and chose to waive those warnings or waive those rights. That factual finding was supported by the evidence. The court heard not only the testimony of the three officers, but heard had before it a document which corroborated its conclusion. It had the FBI 302, a summary of an interview that had a notation in it that the Miranda warnings had been given. Now, I acknowledge that this is an important piece of paper, and police should not lose a Miranda waiver form, but the fact of the matter is it happened here. District court could have taken into account and did take into account the fact that it didn't have that form to decide whether or not the Miranda warnings had been given. But the district court's finding that they had been is entitled to appropriate deference. Again, with respect to obstruction of justice, appellant essentially argues, well, he was mistaken, he testified to the best of what he could remember. And if that were true, the district court was free to make the factual finding that he had a memory lapse or he had some other reason for testifying the way that he did. The district court had before it the testimony of the officers that said he's walking in the middle of the road and cars have to drive around him. And it had before it the testimony of this defendant that he was walking on the side of the road and no cars had to pass around him. And the district court made a credibility determination that the defendant was, in fact, in the middle of the road. And that factual finding is entitled to the same deference with respect to the obstruction of justice enhancement. The defendant lied under oath at the suppression hearing, and that is the basis for an obstruction of justice enhancement. And with that, Your Honor, I ask that the court affirm the findings of the district court with respect to the motion to suppress, which is supported either with the recovery of the firearm, which is supported either as a recovery recovery of the valid under Terry, or as a product of search incident to arrest. Recovery of the cocaine as a valid product of a search incident to arrest. That the district court's factual findings that the Miranda warnings had been given and waived were correct, and the district court's factual finding that the defendant should receive an obstruction of justice enhancement was also correct. And so I ask the court affirm the district court.
Mr. Marks, just as a point of information, really, this defendant was picked up in the same area several months before?
Yes, Judge. There
was
are
he ever charged with any of those earlier offenses?
Yes, he was, Your Honor. The first, he was. There were two prior arrests. There's one in March, and then I believe there's another one in June.
Yeah.
With respect to the first one, he was charged with that in this case. The defendant was not found not guilty of the possession of that firearm. With respect to the June 3rd incident, the defendant was charged with possession with intent to distribute crack cocaine. He was found guilty of that charge. Those two incidents occurred at a parking lot which is essentially a block or two from the location where he was walking down the middle of the road. So with respect to whether or not this is a high crime area, court heard evidence that yes, it was a high crime area, but it heard more specific evidence than that. It heard from the officers that the specific type of criminal activity that occurs in this area is drug sales and prostitution, and that this defendant was involved in such activity.
Why was he out after this earlier incident?
It's not disclosed in the trial record, Your Honor, but the original arrests were made by Gary Police Department, and they did not place the defendant under arrest in connection with those two prior offenses. And so it's at this point that the federal government steps in where you have one, two, three.
This Ponderosa operation was ongoing all throughout all this time?
Yes. This location, their officers testified that this parking lot, truckers stopped for the night, and it is an open drug fair and place of prostitution where truck drivers are provided with narcotics and then head off with their 18, you know, with their multi-ton rigs down there.
Not the Miller part of Gary, is it?
No.
Despite grits, this is going on.
It is a gradual process. We're doing the best we can to make a difference. It takes time. It's unfortunate that it does continue. This is an example of the unfortunate circumstances because you have it happening again and again and again.
You know how many pending cases, criminal cases, are in the Hammond Division?
I do not know, but it's quite a large number, Your Honor.
And many of them are street-level crimes out of Gary, right?
Yes, that's correct. I believe, rough estimate, out of our office last year, there may have been 60 to 70 indictments arising out of Crit during the last calendar year. That's a rough estimate, which is by far the most significant number of cases that are being brought out of our office.
Many thanks.
Thank you.
Does counsel, does the appellant have any more time? Mr. McCluskey, one minute, if you have any rebuttal.
No, I only have 1 minute, so I'll make it quick. Two things. In regards to the Miranda waiver form, as I pointed out in my brief, the entire thing is predicated upon the existence of a 302 of an officer that doesn't specifically remember reading his Miranda waiver form. I think the court was clearly wrong. And in regards to the issue about lying under oath, again, what's the difference between Mr. Jackson testifying to what he remembered, what Officer Eakins testified to what he remembers, and my client was acquitted of. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCluskey. Mr. McCluskey, you served by appointment of the court in this case, and the court wants to express its deep thanks to you for your fine job on behalf of your client. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel in this case, and the case will be taken under advisement.
Thanks.
We have concluded this morning's call, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.